Welcome to the Creative Differences Podcast. I'm Gabby, and I bet you were shocked to hear my voice first.
Yeah, this is crazy work. I'm Cassie, and it's weird today. It's weird.
And I'm Demi, and dear God, it was so hard getting this one episode together. Welcome to another episode of the Creative Differences Podcast, your one-stop shop for movie reviews, Fancast Fridays, Throwback Thursdays, and a number of other pop culture-related items. Today, we will be talking about our top 10 favorite shows from 2025.
Also, this is our girl power episode where we it don't is. Have any Dallas.
Wow. It feels weird. It's like, true. Like, we didn't plan that. I don't know. I don't know if I want to celebrate it because he's sick, but, you know, rip, I guess.
And I thought that this year was going to be the year that I got all of us on for every episode.
Well, by the
you were close. Wrong. But at least you got me on for every episode. That hasn't That's happened true. In, like, 3 years or something.
Yeah, that's so true. God. All right, guys, before we get into it, please like, share, subscribe, hit the bell, hit the buttons, whatever you can find, because we'd like to have an audience. This is a lot of work.
That's our New Year's resolution.
I want you guys to know that this series of episodes that we're doing this week alone takes me about 2 weeks to put together all together. So
she don't get paid for this, so
I don't.
Please like and subscribe. Each of these episodes is like 3 days worth of work.
Ooh.
All right, guys. So rules of the game. I hate being the one to have to do this, but Dallas isn't here, so I have to try my best. But rules of the game are, this is a ranking list. This is our top 10. Each of us are going to go round by round saying what our favorite show is for that round. And if somebody else has it higher up on their list, they will call skip, and we shall wait until we are at that round to talk about it. So for instance, if Gabby has Pluribus at number 8 and Cassie has Pluribus as her number 1, Cassie will skip. And we shall wait until we get to number 1 to talk about the show.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure neither of you guys have seen Pluribus, so I felt like it was good.
No, that was a good one.
Not, so, you know.
Yeah, just, you know, had to make sure. Oh, for the record, I'm going to tell you guys now, spoiler alert, I will be spoiling television shows.
Okay.
Because, yes. So, let's get into this, shall we? Honorable mentions. Gabby, do you have any honorable mentions?
I don't, because I barely watched any.
I should not be shocked. And out of politeness, Cassie, do you have any honorable mentions?
Even if I, like, wasn't against doing them, no, I wouldn't have any. This was a rough year.
Damn.
All right, guys. I'm going to give you guys Dallas's honorable mentions, and then you guys will just have to wait until we get to number 1 to hear the rest of Dallas's list. But okay. Dallas's honorable mentions are Sakamoto Days, Abbott Elementary, Mythic Quest, Mo, and WWE NXT. I believe is how that's
Girl,
pronounced.
Of course.
I know nothing about wrestling. I don't know if that's next. I don't know if that's NXT.
I'm surprised that stayed on the honorable mentions. That nigga be posting every week about, like, I want to talk about the WWE, but maybe that's a different show. I don't know.
I think it's like Raw.
Yeah,
or
I think Raw is the one he
The live stuff. I think NXT must be like the post-game analysis. I don't know.
Well, wait till you guys hear the rest of this list. But anyway, my honorable mentions are Stranger Things, Poker Face, The Bear, Doctor Who, and The Last of Us.
Rip.
Rip. So that takes us to our number 10s. Gabby, what's your number 10 show?
Hello. My number 10 show, it has never been on my number 10 before. It is called Bob's Burgers. Yay. It is season 16. It started coming out September, and I've only seen a few episodes, but it's delightful as usual. My partner, he plays it, and I'm the guy that stands up like, oh, I don't really want to watch this, and then I'm in the corner like peeping in, and eventually I sit down. So for those of you that don't know, Bob's Burgers is an animated sitcom. It was created by Lauren Bouchard, and it has the voices of H. John Benjamin, Dan Mitz, Eugene Merman, Larry Murphy, John Roberts, and Kristen Schaal, and a bunch of other comedians like doing cameos and guest appearances. It's been on Fox. It started in 2011, and this is obviously season 16 that started in September. It's not over yet, but it's good enough for me to put it on the list because new episodes. And I really like it. It's just a cute family that is just struggling to keep the little restaurant open, and their children are weird as hell. And Bob, he's the straight man, and his whole rest of his family is just really wacky, and I love all of them. This season just continues the delight.
I honestly have never seen that show before. I didn't even realize it had that many seasons.
Oh my God, it's so cute, and you should watch it. It's like one of the only shows that's still having like 22 episode seasons.
Damn.
Like,
yeah, it's a network show. Thing anymore.
It's not really a thing anymore. Season 15 was 22 episodes. This season was 15, And then season 14, I think, because of the writer's strike, was 16 episodes. But yeah, before that, it was 22, 22, 22, 22 seasons. You know, crazy.
I wish we could be like honorable mention to Buffy the Vampire Slayer for being a show that we've been watching all year.
Me too, because we have been.
A year? Maybe you'll have new. I don't know. There's going to be new
at some point, right?
We're going
to have some new episodes soon. We should finish the season, all of it soon.
No,
right?
We won't finish until 2027. Early 2027.
What? Okay, never mind.
There's seven seasons.
Okay, so maybe by then the season two will come out, and then I can put it on my list, because I don't want to watch the new blood without knowing
how everything ended.
Yeah.
All right. So, Cassie, that takes us to you. What's your number 10?
So, but in the actor episode, I did not make a full 10. And so it was decided without my consent that every entry that I didn't have something for would be I hated it. So this time, I don't have a full 10 because I don't want shit. But what I will do is I'll replace all the things I don't have with Grey's Anatomy, because I started that over and I've been going
through that.
Yes, I've watched 20 seasons of Grey's Anatomy this year, and that's like all I've watched. So
my
number 10 is going to be Grey's Anatomy, but not the new stuff.
Woo!
But all the old stuff.
That's what I should have done for my honorable mentions. Buffy the Vampire Slayer that we're
Buffy
watching.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yep.
All right. Oh my goodness, that's good. That's all funny. Right, guys. This is where I wish Dallas was here, because my number 10, which I fought really long and hard this morning over whether or not my number 10 would be Stranger Things or this show. I finally established that it would be this show. My number 10 is Bel-Air, which is developed by TJ Brady, Morgan Stevenson Cooper, Rashid Newsom, and Malcolm Spellman. And it's based on the sitcom The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And it stars Jabari Banks, Ollie Sholatan, Adrian Holmes, Cassandra Freeman, Jimmy Ekingbola, Coco Jones, Akira Akbar, Simone Joy Jones, and Jordan L. Jones. And the IMDb summary is, set in modern day America, Peacock's new 1-hour drama series Bel-Air reimagines the beloved sitcom The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air through a new dramatic take on Will's complicated journey from the streets of West Philadelphia to the gated mansions of Bel-Air. As these two worlds collide, Will reckons with the power of second chances while navigating the conflicts, emotions, and biases of a world far different from the only one he's ever known. So I'm going to do the thing where I just go through like an uncomprehensive list of just things that I liked about this season. This was the final season of Bel-Air. So goodbye to Bel-Air. It was nice knowing you. But the cast did an excellent job. All of the Easter eggs to the OG sitcom. Aunt Viv doing the Aunt Viv dance. Will, Carlton, Hillary, and Ashley doing the iconic psh. Ashley getting a couple of storylines. The college entry storyline. The episode with Will's dad. Janet Huber appearing as Aunt Viv's midwife. Tyra Banks' guest appearance. Coco Jones being in a few episodes, even though it's clear that she is more focused on her music now than being on the show.
Aww.
How the Uncle Phil and Jeffrey storyline ended, even though it felt a bit too unreal for the show. Jazz getting into the dispensary business, because of course he would. The Eat and Fire reference. Thank you. Aww. Represent. The fact that the show ends almost the exact same way that the OG did, with a few detail changes, as well as the epic and well done Will Smith cameo. Bravo.
Ooh.
Bravo. I spent the entire series hoping that Will Smith would one day show up on the show, and they did it exactly the way that I think they should have, because there's no way you could bring Will Smith onto the show and then like just move past it. Waiting until the final episode was the perfect way to go about it.
Excellent.
Oh, also the speech that Will Smith gives in that episode as well. Beautiful. Mwah. My number 10 is Bel-Air. If you never got into it, I do highly recommend it. I think it's a really good reimagining of a show that for those of us who grew up in the 90s, most of us who grew up in the 90s, we all really loved. So that takes us to number 9. Gabby, what is your number 9?
Yes, my number 9 is St. Denis Medical. It's created by Eric Legend and Justin Spitzer. It stars Wendy McLovin Covey, Allison Tolman, Josh Lawson, Kyun Kim, Kaliko Kawaii, David Alan Greer, and Mekki Leeper. It is essentially a mockumentary show about a struggling or low-income hospital and the kind of kooky nursing and doctoral and administrative staff that runs the hospital. It's basically kind of like Abbott, just at a hospital, or like Parks and Rec. Actually, closer to Parks and Rec, because they're a little bit sillier. Abbott's a lot more wholesome, and the characters seem to care a little bit more. So if it's the vibes more of Parks and Rec, it's in the second season. They're getting a 10-episode season. We've only got up to episode 10 out, so we might get some more, but I'm not sure. It's cute. I watched it casually, and that's why it made the list. A lot of my sitcoms are going to be like, it was cute, it was funny, that's it, I liked it.
Yeah, I was about to say, you can tell that Gabby's list is like comfort shows.
Yeah, also 20-minute shows that I can squeeze in between my daughter letting me watch the TV.
Question.
Yeah.
What defines a casual watch?
I see episodes on and off. I don't catch the new episode as soon as it comes out.
Gotcha.
So like, okay. If I'm like, oh, there it is, let me watch it.
Thank you.
A lot of these will be spread over like two apps, I think. Three apps. Because those are the main three that I use, which is like Hulu, Disney Plus, and Peacock.
Which is funny because you could just use Disney Plus now because all of Hulu stuff is on there.
You're right. I should cancel that membership. Okay.
No. You can't cancel the Hulu membership, though. At the moment, you have to have a Hulu subscription in order to get access to all the Hulu stuff that's on Disney Plus.
That's so rude.
I only know this because that's how I watch my animes on Disney Plus.
Got it.
That's how I watch my animes is such a sentence.
It's like, I gotta catch my soaps.
I was gonna say, that's how I catch my stories.
Cassie, do you have a number
fucking
nine?
All right, Grandma.
Or is it Grey's Anatomy?
My number nine is Grey's Anatomy.
Hell yeah.
I'm telling you, 20 seasons of that show, it never regains the magic of the first few seasons, but it has its moments.
That's how I feel, even though I only watched a season and a half. Yeah.
I was
ugly crying over my computer.
You only watched a season and a half. Did you even see the Denny stuff? Did you even see the bomb two-parter?
Yeah, like, I saw the bomb two-parter and the Denny stuff. Oh, maybe it was two and a half seasons. I think it was on season three. What's his face that hurt his hands? And anyway, I was ugly crying over my computer at 3 a.m. And I was in summer classes where I had to like really focus. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't keep staying up this late, ugly crying over my computer when I have a class at 8 a.m. that I need to really focus on. So I stopped and I never went back because I was like, this is just gonna make me cry and I don't want to do that.
21 seasons are on Netflix, so
I'm good. I think I'm good.
Cassie, just let me know when you finally get to Midori Francis showing up on the show.
Oh, she been there.
Oh, you reached Midori already?
Oh, she been there. I mean you say already.
She watched 20 seasons.
I'm on season 20. Like, it took a while to get there, but she been there.
You were on like season 12 when I was there 2 months ago.
Yeah, I don't think you understand how quickly I can make it through Grey's Anatomy.
That's why I was so surprised that you reached Midori already. I love Midori.
Yeah, she's great. She's like one of my favorite characters on the show right now who will probably not be there in another season, but you know, it's what they do.
I actually do know what happens to her character, but yeah, I love Midori. She was great on The Sex Lives of College Girls. All right, so that takes us to my number nine. My number nine is Peacemaker, which is created by James Gunn. It's based on a character created by Joe Gill and Pat Boyette, and it stars John Cena, Jennifer Holland, Danielle Brooks, Freddie Stroma, Steve Agee, Frank Grillo, Sol Rodriguez, and Dee Bradley Baker. And the IMDb summary, which is now inaccurate because we're in season two, picking up where the Suicide Squad left off, Peacemaker returns home after recovering from his encounter with Bloodsport, only to discover that his freedom comes at a price. That's really not the summary for season two, but that's fine. Anyway, here's my incomprehensive list of things that I liked about this season. The performances, especially from John Cena and Jennifer Holland. The smaller and more grounded story versus trying to go bigger, because last year was about an alien invasion and... really, I don't know if you should try and go much bigger than that in your second season. The After Show podcast with James Gunn, Jennifer Holland, and Steve Agee. Vigilante meeting other vigilante. The way James Gunn presents Earth X up until the big reveal. It's very show, don't tell. Peacemaker struggling with his place in the world. Peacemaker's bond with his brother. The inclusion of Rick Flagg Sr., who I still think is the worst, but it's because I like how James Gunn writes him and not because I think it's a bad character. The fallout from Superman. The Eagly storyline. Langston Fleury and John Economos' dynamic. The scene when the 11th Street kids reunite. Harcourt going off in that bar fight. Adebayo's reaction to being on Earth X. The exploration of the quantum unfolding chamber. The inclusion of the Justice Gang and Maxwell Lord. And the Lex Luthor cameo. Because, man, Nicholas Holt was acting.
Hell yeah.
I love him as Lex Luthor. He's so good.
He's so good.
So good.
I mean, are we surprised, though?
But that takes us to our number eights. Gabby, What is your number eight?
My numero ocho is Animal Control. I love this show. It gives me Community vibes, not just because it has Joel McHale in it, basically playing the same character he played on Community, but let me get on with it. Created by Bob Fisher, Rob Greenberg, and Dan Sterling, starring Joel McHale, Vella Lovell, Michael Rowland, Ravi V. Patel, and Grace Palmer. It is a sitcom on Fox. It is about a group of animal control workers in Seattle. They get up to some hijinks. Joel McHale's character is always a disgraced former something. So he's a disgraced former police officer. And so sometimes he's investigating things and he doesn't really need to. Last season, it was like this sale of endangered species. I'm mostly talking about season three right now. Yeah, I hope this show keeps going. It's been chugging along slowly. Every season, I'm like, is it going to get canceled? Is it going to get canceled? Who knows? I really like the chemistry between the cast is really delightful. It is low stakes because it's just people at animal control. My favorite character is played by Vella Lovell. She was previously known for being in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend as Heather Davis. Her character on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend was kind of like a little sort of like sarcastic badass. Here she's like a anxiety riddled head of the animal control department in that precinct. She's the head of the precinct and she's just like trying to make things work, and she has a cute little like will they won't they with Michael Rowland's character, who plays Shred. His name is Fred, but he was a former professional skateboarder, so they call him Shred.
Nice.
It's adorable. I love it so much. It's really cute. I ship them so hard.
It's really funny to go from me talking about Superman to you going to Animal Control, because Maria Gabriela De Faria, who plays the engineer in Superman, was on Animal Control for a while.
Oh, she played who now on Superman?
She's the engineer.
It's the lady with the hands and the saw blades and the...
That is not what she looked like on Animal Control. She looked like a cutie little patootie.
All
she
they was did was shave like... the sides of her head and give her braids.
Yeah, but they no, I think they made her darker too. Or they put her in a tanning bed. I don't know what they did, because she looks like real light skin because she's supposed to be Spanish on the
That's
show.
That's really funny. Yeah, she's a Venezuelan and apparently lives in the Pasadena area. Shout out to her.
Yo, hell yeah, hometown hero.
Also, I think you would like her character from Deadly Class, because her...
Was she the one with the...
Yeah, she's the Day of the Dead kind of styled assassin. Literally my second favorite assassin in all media. And she got a good ending in the comic books, which made me so happy. Anyway, Cassie, do you have a number eight?
Of course I have a number eight. It's Grey's Anatomy. You know how it is.
Hey, it is Grey's Anatomy. I almost feel like every single round we should talk about something from Grey's Anatomy, but let's keep it moving.
Okay, so most recently, what do we got going on? Teddy just got fired because she was giving Meredith money when she wasn't supposed to give Meredith money. Guaranteed that's going to turn around. She'll be reinstated like an episode later, because Grey's Anatomy don't do long-term consequences that much.
Hell yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
I'm just saying, there was a bit, she and Owen ran to Europe and then came back like two episodes later. And it was just like, what was even the point?
Who ran away to Europe?
Teddy and Owen ran away to Europe because they were helping people with assisted suicide, which was illegal. So they ran away to Europe, but then they came back like two episodes later and there wasn't really much consequence. And it was just stupid.
That's crazy. I mean, this is like when they killed Denny and like nothing happened.
So we were talking about DC stuff. My number eight is Creature Commandos, also created by James Gunn, based on characters created by J.M. DeMatteis and Pat Broderick, and it stars Frank Grillo, Indira Varma, Sean Gunn, Alan Tudyk, Zoe Chow, David Harbour, Maria Bakalova, and Viola Davis. And the IMDb summary is, a group of non-human criminals comprised of an anthropomorphic weasel, a robot, the Bride of Frankenstein, a radioactive skeleton, and their human leader are tasked with stopping an evil sorceress. Now you might be saying, hey, to me, most of that series took place in 2024. You're right, but like the last episode or two came out in 2025, so I'm counting it to this list because the show hadn't ended yet in 2024.
That's what I had to do like 2 years ago.
It's our list and we can do whatever the fuck we want, so.
Hell yeah.
I mean, if we can, I could have put Buffy on here, but I'm not going to do that. Anyway, fantastic voice cast. The way each episode focuses on a different member of the team. G.I. Robot being an inspiration to us all. Nina being the absolute sweetest. The heartbreak I felt in the finale. Anya Chalotra as Cersei. The way Frankenstein is portrayed as entitled and childish. You might have heard us talking about how much we like how well adapted the Frankenstein movie is. I also like this version of Frankenstein's monster. It's a very different version, but I like it for the purposes of the show.
Is it played by David Harbour?
Yes, he is. The Bride's Choice at the end of the show, the bride and Nina's relationship, Dr. Phosphorus' story in the wild downward spiral, the first Batman sighting of the DCU, first appearance of Clayface in the DCU, and I'm curious as to how this version will fit with this year's upcoming movie, the absolutely heartbreaking episode about Weasel, how James Gunn can take a character you dislike or who disgusts you and make you empathize and care for them, and cheers to the Tin Man. And those are my thoughts on Creature Commandos, which takes us to number 7. Gabby. Ooh,
my number 7 is Abbott Elementary.
Nice. Yes. I really got to catch up, but I'm so far behind.
I am also extremely far behind. This is low-key from the season that came out earlier in 2025 that I'm talking about right now. Anyway, created by Quinta Brunson, starring Quinta Ooh. Brunson, Tyler James Williams, woo, Janelle James, Lisa Ann Walter, Chris Perfetti, Cheryl Lee Ralph, and William Sanford Davis. I'm mostly talking about
season four.
Right now, I don't have a lot to say. Okay, I will have more to say about my later shows, probably actually starting from my number 6. But basically, it's That's a good it old mockumentary. It's fun. It's hilarious. It highlights, you know, the struggles that teachers have to endure in US because, you know, our government doesn't care about schools.
Especially this administration.
Yeah. Oh, especially this one. It just gives you the good feels, even if when they are struggling, and it's really cute and these people really care about these kids. And my favorite part is this show's been going on for 4 seasons. It's an elementary school, which is
5 seasons
in the US. Yeah, 5 seasons, sorry. And the US, we spent the most time in elementary school. It's like anywhere from 6 to 7 years versus like middle school, which is 2 years, and high school, which is 4 years. So they've kept the same kind of extra cast of children. So we've seen them growing up. You're starting to recognize them here and there. Like, oh, I've seen that kid in like several episodes. I've seen this other kid in a few episodes. So that's also one of my favorite things is like they've kept the kids consistent. They don't change them out constantly. So it's really cute.
I really love the comedy style of this show. Like I said, I'm like super behind on it, but it is a show that I like really love. There are very few sitcoms that I keep track of, which is why I need to go back to this one because I actually really do enjoy it enough to keep track of it. But I love the comedy on this show. And like you said, it's so wholesome and it feels so sweet. And it does feel very relatable as kids who went to public school. So even if we don't understand it from like the teacher perspective, I think we can remember like as kids what the other side of it felt like.
Yep, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly with you.
All right, Cassie, is your number 7 Grey's Anatomy?
Maybe you know what it is.
Oh my gosh.
So let's see what to talk about this time. Let's see, we did that. I don't know what happened. Helm was hooking up with Midori Francis's character, but now they're not together anymore. I don't really understand why. Midori Francis was like, oh, I gotta focus on the job. And okay, you were enjoying getting railed, but I guess you don't care about that anymore. So anyway, that's this version. That's number 7.
Except with Midori Francis's characters in these breakups, my guy. Actually, no, her breakup on The Sex Lives of College Girls was extremely understandable. Even though you wouldn't catch me breaking up with Renee Rapp. Couldn't be me. So I feel like next year, Cassie's list has got to be like, we got to open it up and just be like, Cassie, what are your favorite TV shows and video games?
Now that I could do.
Yeah, I'm giving it to you next year.
Bless.
All right, guys, my number 7 is Dexter Resurrection, which is created by Clyde Phillips. It stars Michael C. Hall, Jack Alcott, Uma Thurman, David Zayas. Apologies to this man if I mispronounce his name. I hope I don't. But I most likely am going to. Untare Guma Umbahu Umwine, Kadia Saraf, Dominic Fumusa, James Remar, and Peter Dinklage. And the IMDb summary is, Dexter Morgan awakens from a coma and sets out for New York City determined to find Harrison and make things right. But when Miami Metro's Angel Batista arrives with questions, Dexter realizes his past is catching up to him fast. This is like a return to form for the Dexter TV series. I think the first 4 seasons of Dexter are excellent, like fantastic television. Season 5 is good. Season 6 is not great. Season 7 and 8 I enjoy and I think are good. Oh, and I also watched Dexter New Blood, which I also thought was good. But I don't think we ever returned to like the highs of like seasons 1 through 4 until this series. This was a great season. I love Dexter and Harrison's dynamic. I'm happy that Hannah is mentioned as Harrison's mom and important in his life, as important as Rita, who was his birth mother. The return of Angel Batista, even though I knew where his story would go. Uma Thurman being a badass, Kristen Ritter, Eric Stone Street, David Desmalchian, and Neil Patrick Harris all appearing as serial killers. Kristen Ritter's character turn, the plot twist with David Desmalchian's character, Michael C. Hall's performance. That man just knows Dexter. As he should. Dexter making a friend that doesn't end in absolute tragedy. Dexter and Blessing's friendship. The rideshare angle of the show. The new location. Detective Claudette Wallace in all of her behaviors. I don't know if she's autistic, but she's absolutely coded that way. And Katia Saraf's performance is one of my favorites. Claudette constantly listening to Staying Alive in her earphones when she's trying to focus on the job and then immediately busting out dancing when she hears it at a gala she doesn't even want to be at. She saw her moment and took it, and she's been waiting for it for sure. Peter Dinklage's performance as a character who's obsessed with serial killers. The wild idea that one of the characters didn't realize Hamilton is full of rap music and then being microaggressive about it. The odd serial killer rituals that they developed for this season. Dexter getting back into form. Dexter being proud of Harrison taking after him and then accepting him when it turns out he's not. The way they work together in the finale. The evolution of their relationship through the season. The implication that Dexter has a whole roster of serial killers to chase next season. And the show ending on Dexter's quote,
"I'm exactly who I need to be. Exactly who you want me to be."
So the show finally embracing that. Fans don't really want to see Dexter get his comeuppance. We really just want to watch him kill serial killers. Which takes us to number 6. Gabby, what's your number 6?
My number 6 is Saturday Night Live. So we are on the 51st season now. However, I'm going to cover the 50th. I feel like their 50th season was one of the strongest that we've had in probably the last like 5 years. It was absolutely hilarious. We got the iconic Domingo sketch that whole season. Bowen Yang was in his like chief form. I feel like Marcelo Hernandez also like fully cemented himself as like a star of SNL.
He's great.
Yes, between the Domingo sketch and my favorite. So two of my favorite current cast members are Jane Wicklund and Marcelo Hernandez. And my favorite bit that they do together on Weekend Update is the couple that you cannot believe is together, which is like this super jock dude and then like this very long brown hair, kind of mousy introvert woman. And you're like, how does this work? And then they start talking and you're like, oh, they love each other deeply. This is crazy. it's very, very funny. And that started last season. We've got the continued bit between Michael Che and Colin Jost where they write rope jokes for each other, which is
the joke exchange.
It's iconic every time. I never feel bad for Colin Jost.
Please continue to put a camera on Scarlett Johansson whenever they have to do them. That would just add. I love that they did that.
That was insane. I think that was last season too.
Yeah.
And then the 50th celebration was awesome. I really, really enjoyed it. My favorite part was Adam Driver, just because I love him. And also John Hamm. I love that John Hamm's
around.
Pedro
Pascal taking part in the Domingo sketch.
Oh, that too. That was delightful. I was going to say,
with Sabrina
also,
Carpenter.
I love how much Pedro Pascal like cameos on SNL. I love how much Bad Bunny cameos on SNL. I love the like mean mother-in-law sketch that Pedro Pascal continuously does. It is, as Latina, very, very relatable. I want to just highlight the Bad Bunny episode where he was both the musical guest and the host, mostly because they did El Chavo del Ocho, and that is a Mexican / Latin American classic. And I didn't ever think I was going to see that in like mainstream America. So good on you guys. And I love SNL. Thank you so much.
I do want to say, speaking of Marcello, like one of my favorite sketches of SNL is the one of him and Ego, a teacher sketch that is so freaking funny to me every single time.
I don't know if I've seen that one.
Oh, it's one of my favorites. You got to look it up later. It's okay. It's like a parody of that show, A Teacher, where it's a student-teacher relationship or whatever.
Oh, yes, and she is like no nonsense. She's like, what are you doing?
Down. Yeah,
it's so funny.
What did you think this was?
You were giving me help with the SATs.
I thought it was special.
Oh, you thought I wanted to have sex with someone who can't do the SATs? You keep circling the bubble instead of filling it in. You think that's sexy?
A little.
Yes, I've seen that. It's hilarious. Sketches.
Oh, it's so good.
This season, I want to say goodbye to Bo and Yang. You icon, you legend. I know why you had to leave. It was time, but I'm going to miss you. And his final episode was the same episode that Ariana Grande hosted. It was the last episode of 2025.
Makes sense.
And I also want to say goodbye to Ego Nwodum and Heidi Gardner. You guys were also some of my favorites. The three of them, I feel like, definitely were part of the reason that we've had some of the strongest seasons out of SNL in the last few years. Because they're not really catering to dudes anymore. They're way more catering to like awkward women and people generally, which I feel like, hell yeah. Expand your audience.
Cassie, is number six Grey's Anatomy?
Yes, indeed.
Throw us another plot point.
Okay, what's another plot point with Grey's Anatomy? I think Lincoln and Joe are together again now. They're like, they're together, they're not together. They're together, they're not together. Just be together. I don't understand what all of this will they, won't they bullshit is when like you've been best friends forever. Alex left her out of nowhere. Just like, come on, girl. Just do it. I think they're doing it. I don't know. Good for them. Whatever.
This is so funny. I almost don't want you to have a list so that we can just keep going over random.
I mean,
Grey's
I
Anatomy
might as well
points.
Not for how much Grey's Anatomy is going to show up on this. But you know what?
It's great. All right, guys. My number six is All Her Fault, which is created by Megan Gallagher, based on a book by Andrea Mara. And it stars Sarah Snook, Dakota Fanning, Michael Pena, Jake Lacey, Duke McLeod, Daniel Monks, Abby Elliott, Jay Ellis, and Sophia Lillis. And the IMDb summary is, a mom must find out who kidnapped her son after a playdate at the park. That's incorrect. The playdate was not at the park. It was at somebody's house. Anyway, list of things that I loved about the show. First off, Sarah Snook's performance. Amazing. Incredible. Love her. An absolutely engaging thriller. I was stressed from the first few minutes. I was like, why am I stressed? I already knew what the plot was. like, I came into this knowing what I was getting into. She doesn't know, but I do. Why am I stressed out?
Good performance / editing? I don't know.
Just all around great. Great thematic story about how people will always find a reason to blame women. Sophia Lillis's heartbreaking performance in episode 7. I am haunted by what could have been questions because of her. Marissa and Jenny's friendship. Michael Pena playing the most loving father. The portrayal of parenting a child with a developmental disability. The appearance of one of my favorite Power Rangers from Mystic Force, Melanie Vallejo. What's up? Listen, that was a shock for me. I was like, wait, I know her. She plays one of my favorite Power Rangers from when I was a kid.
Aww.
One of my first ever ships, too. Anyway, Abby Elliott playing a member of another toxic family. Jake Lacey, this is a message to you. I will now be typecasting you and immediately judging you if you are playing a rich man in anything. Ever again. Because
dude, he went from playing sweet wholesome dude to like piece of shit now.
Oh my god, I should have known. And I did know, but I was like, no, that's typecasting, don't do that to that man. I knew it.
Yeah, first it was anti-typecasting because he played such wholesome dudes, and now it's like, I don't know which Jake Lacey I'm gonna get.
I know, he's smarmy. Anyway, the way the show challenges the gender roles that exist within parenthood, the portrayal of Brian's physical disability and his acceptance of that disability, the usage of synesthesia, the absolute madness at the end of episode 5, the way the show uses flashbacks and chooses to reveal information and recontextualize events that we've already seen.
The longer we are married, the more I like it when you're gone.
Alexa, play I Think I Like You Better When You're Gone by Renee Rapp.
Oof.
And those are my thoughts on All Her Fault. Not all of my thoughts. I have so many thoughts, and usually I can only think of them while I'm watching the show. But guys, it's so good. If you have not seen it, it's on Peacock. Please watch All Her Fault. Actually, wait, hold on. If you have children, maybe do not watch All Her Fault.
Yeah, don't do it. It's not for me. I know it.
If you have children or if you have suffered from the loss of a child, maybe don't watch All Her Fault. Everybody else, though, if you like a good drama, thriller, mystery, this is it, though. This is it. All right, that takes us to our top five shows. So far, the bottom five for Cassie have all been Grey's Anatomy. Gabby, what is your number five?
My number five is Nobody Wants This.
Oh, nice.
Yes, I've seen both seasons. It was delightful.
Shout out to Toa Bird because she has a song from the second season.
Ooh. Created by Aaron Foster, starring Kristen Bell, Adam Brody, Justine Loop, Timothy Simmons, and Jackie Tone. Nobody Wants This follows the love at first sight relationship between a young American rabbi, Noah, played by Adam Brody, and an irascible agnostic woman, Joanne, played by Kristen Bell. It is based off of Aaron Foster's real life experience, where she met her husband and eventually converted to Judaism. So this show is cute. I know a lot of people didn't like the season. I will say, and my boyfriend said this while we were watching it, I was like, they fell in love last season. And he's like, well, they have to throw a wrench in it this season. And I'm like, exactly.
That's how just TV because, works.
Yeah, that's how TV works. But also just because, you know, you decided that you wanted to stay together doesn't mean that there aren't still going to be people having negative opinions about your relationship and you having to navigate that. And also you too having to figure out what the future looks like for you if one of you is an extremely religious person and the other one is very much not. And he's not only extremely religious, but he is a leader in his religion. What I like about the season, though, is so they would have kind of an issue the whole episode. And then at the end, they would have a conversation where they would open up and actually resolve the problem, which I was like, that's good. That's pretty healthy relationship model there. So at the end, when it looked like they were going to break up, I was a little bit surprised because I was like, y'all have been solving problems all season. What's going on? It got sorted. Everything was fine. Some other characters broke up. Some other characters stayed together. Some other characters are trying to figure it out. I really liked it. I know a lot of people didn't, but I thought it was an interesting move forward. And there's going to be another season. And this show has been producing a season a year, which is crazy.
We love a show that does that.
Yeah. And they've been filming here in LA, which I also appreciate. So can't wait till next season. It's probably going to be next year. And I can't wait. Or this year. And I can't wait.
Cassie, is number 5 Grey's Anatomy?
Ah.
Throw us a plot point.
Okay. Let's see. I guess Maggie and Winston are officially not together anymore, which sucks because, like, they were cute and it was one of the few non-swirl romances on the show. Shout out, Shonda. I know you love that shit. But, you know, sometimes you go to Chicago and then don't talk to your husband and then divorce papers happen and there you go, I guess. Rip the dream.
Wild.
It wasn't like an intentional don't talk to the husband. It was every time they were going to talk about stuff that something happened. Something got in the way. He didn't go to Chicago because he had to get a guy out of a like homemade watercraft thing. And it was a whole Grey's Anatomy.
You can't go after what we...
No, I don't know. She showed up and that's when they decided like, all right, this ain't working no more.
Grey's Anatomy for y'all. All right, guys, my number 5 is The Studio, which is created by Evan Goldberg, Alex Gregory, Peter Hayuk. I don't know how to pronounce that last name. It is Huyck, Frida Perez, and Seth Rogen. And it stars Seth Rogen, Catherine O'Hara, Ike Barinholtz, Chase Swee Wonders, and Catherine Hahn. And the IMDb summary is, follows a legacy Hollywood movie studio striving to survive in a world where it is increasingly difficult for art and business to live together.
Oof.
It's so good.
I'm so glad somebody watched it. Yes.
Me, Dallas, and Jesse all love the show. My list of things that I love. Absolutely hilarious. The cast is amazing. Seth Rogen's character being somewhat of a proxy for film lovers like me. Zoe Kravitz's performance as herself. Dave Franco getting everyone high before CinemaCon. The Hell noir yeah. episode with Olivia Wilde. The Wonder episode. The mention of Charlize Theron parties. That's the Hollywood party that I want to go to. I see Ooh. The photos from that party and I've known about the Charlize Theron parties for a while. So for that to be like a plot point in like the first episode, I was like, shut up. We're not actually referencing a Charlize Theron party. And to That's have her crazy. Actually in the episode, freaking loved it.
That's amazing.
The Kool-Aid Man race controversy. Matt arguing with medical professionals about the importance of movies. I agree with him mostly, but also in some ways I do not. Searching for Griffin around Las Vegas. Zoe Kravitz's CinemaCon presentation. The entirety of CinemaCon. The whole show being pretty insider knowledge about the industry, but in a rather hyperbolic way, and sometimes not. The Wonder sunset shot in, I believe, episode 1. The drama of trying to give Ron Howard a note. I can't wait to see this ensemble get into more hijinks next season. And also, thank you, Sal Saperstein.
I understood that reference.
And that takes us to number 4. Gabby, what is your number 4?
My number 4 is Percy Jackson and the Olympians.
Ooh, I'm not counting that one until next year.
I needed to count something. I needed my list to make 10.
I'll let you have it. Just everybody know that this show will be on my list next year.
Yeah, I am not going to spoil anything. I will, however, be reading the brief description that is on Wikipedia. So really quick, Percy Jackson and the Olympians, created by Rick Riordan and Jonathan E. Steinberg, based on Percy Jackson and the Olympians, which is a book series by Rick Riordan, starring Walker Scobell, Leah Seva Jeffries, Ariane Simhadri, Charlie Bushnell, Dior Goodjohn, and Daniel Dimer.
Dimer? I also don't know why.
Apologies to Mr. Daniel.
But he's wonderful as Tyson.
Yes. In the second season, because we're in season two, Percy returns to Camp Half-Blood a year later, where he learns that it is under threat from the forces of Kronos and Grover has gone missing and must venture into the Sea of Monsters to find the Golden Fleece. That's where we're at right now. I have caught up completely, so I'm on episode 5,
Love
I believe.
That. Yeah, 5 just came out.
Ooh, we have been pretty diligent, especially since we found a system that works for us to distract my toddler.
Yeah, tomorrow will be the release of episode 6.
Yay!
As of releasing this episode.
I can't wait. We're in the middle of the, what do you call it?
In the middle of the Sea of Monsters.
We're in the middle of Sea of Monsters. We're in the middle of the trials they have to go through, because low-key, this is Odysseus. We're low-key following the Odyssey.
Which is funny, since the Odyssey is coming out this year.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, ooh, we're doing the Odyssey twice this year. First of all, damn, these kids grow up fast. What happened? Why so does fast. Walker Scobell look like a grown man, but also like a little chubby-cheeked, adorable little kid? Can we get these seasons out sooner? Like, why
well,
was Harry Potter...
Well, they're already filming season 3, so
thank
that won't be
goodness,
as long of a wait.
Because I was like, we could have them, like, sprouting beards the next time we see them. Like, the Stranger Things kids, thank goodness, are already filming, because I was like, good Lord. They should already be building sets. They should already be filming. Like, Harry Potter used to do. Harry Potter used to be like, okay, we wrap. Let's start the next one. That's why we got to have the same Harry Potter for, you know, the full decade of it.
They're already filming season 3. I think they're already halfway through filming season 3. So
thank
they're good.
Goodness. Thank goodness. Because I want all these kids to stay. But if they look like grown men, they can't. And grown women. Anyway, love it. Love this cast. Dude, these kids have some acting twops. Holy moly. I love everybody that plays a god. I'm like, oh my God, who is it? They're all a hit. I loved the fates this time around. I will not spoil the casting because that was a fun surprise.
Walker Scobell is yearning this season.
Yes. Oh my God. Hard. And I love it. Yes. But again, it just goes with the acting chops. This is a delightful show. I am coming from the perspective of an adult that watched The Lightning Thief when we were children. And also, I didn't read the books when I was a child. So this is an adult that's coming at it with nothing. I don't know anything. I'm very excited. This is hella cute. And I can't wait to watch it with my toddler when she's older. Right now, she's like, I don't care about people shows. I only care about animated. But we're keeping up with it. It's delightful.
I think when she gets old enough, she should definitely read these books with her as well. Because you'll probably like them. But, you know, might as well just wait until she's at an age to read them. I do want to say that I have really been enjoying this season. They have made, I think, more changes to this season than they did with season 1 in comparison to the books. However, I do think most of these changes are good changes in the same way that I did with season 1. I think that they strengthen the characters a lot more. I love what they've done with Clarice. Clarice is a character in the books who I was kind of indifferent to. And on this show, I love her. Dior Goodjohn is doing such an amazing job, and they've written such great stuff for her to do this season. I've always loved our main trio of actors. As you said, they're very talented. We have gotten our first appearance of Thalia just through a flashback. I already knew Tamara Smart was going to be amazing as Thalia, but getting to actually see her, she is so good and immediately like one of my favorite characters on the show. Mm-hmm. And I cannot wait to see more with that character.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, everybody's doing a great job this season. And the show looks a lot bigger this time around too, especially episode 4. That episode was wild. Also, episode 5 did a thing that I didn't think that they would do, but was hoping for, where they took a character from one of the future series of the novels, and she is in episode 5 where she should be. And I'm just so happy that they did that, because I didn't think that would happen at all. But yeah, second season has been really good so far, which is why I'm saying it'll be on my list next year. I'm very certain of that. I love the Percy Jackson series.
It is. It's so good. And it's something I'm actively keeping up with right now.
Cassie?
Yes.
Is Grey's Anatomy your number 4?
Oh, baby, it is.
Cassie.
No wonder Cassie was trying to get out of recording this episode.
I told you, I ain't got nothing.
I think this is far more amusing than you not being here, though.
Sure. In lieu of a plot point, I'll just say shout out to Simone's hairstyle change in, I think, mid-season 20. this girl, when she realizes, when she blows up her life and doesn't end up marrying the guy that she's supposed to marry because no wedding on Grey's Anatomy can ever go well, and then she's with Lucas, but then, like, he's kind of a fuckboy, and then she changes her hair, and girl is serving cunt every time she's on screen. Black ladies, please do more of the side shave. It's hot.
It's true. It's very true. Cassie made that very popular, not for good reason, unfortunately, but I do remember when she first did it back in, like, 2009, and, like, people went crazy for the look. Not our Cassie.
That was very
singer, singer Cassie. The singer Cassie. Cassie Ventura. All right, guys. My number four, funnily enough, is basically created by most of the same people who created my number five. And it's also a show I forgot that I had a hyper fixation for until it came back. My number four is Gen V. It was developed by Evan Goldberg, Eric Kripke, Craig Rosenberg, and Seth Rogen. And it's based on a comic by Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson. And it stars Jazz Sinclair, Lizzie Broadway, Maddie Phillips, London Thor, Derek Le, Asa German, Derek Luke, and Hamish Linklater. And the IMDb summary is, from the world of the boys comes Gen V, which explores the first generation of superheroes to know that their superpowers are from Compound V. These heroes put their physical and moral boundaries to the test, competing for the school's top ranking. Ooh, boy. My list is long here, so let me get into it. Marie Moreau being my favorite character in the entire boys universe. The tribute paid to Chance Perdomo every time Andre is mentioned. Polarity becoming the team's surrogate dad in the aftermath of Andre's death. Polarity and Emma's dynamic. Kate and Marie having some weird, messed up, toxic mentor-mentee parent-child relationship with the god Eudine. Again. Learning more about Marie's family and finding her sister. The scene when Marie finds out her godmother has been lying to her. Jazz Sinclair's performance all season. Jordan being upset at Marie abandoning them during imprisonment. Marie and Jordan's relationship, Hamish Linklater's portrayal of Cypher, Ethan Slater playing pure evil, the continued social commentary through the show. I love Zach McGowan, but I never want to see Dog Knot ever again. Emma's new little squad of rebel friends, Sam coming back to his senses, Kate's powers being on the fritz for most of the season, causing either hilarious or horrifying results, Marie kissing Jordan before their big gladiator match, Kate having to earn everyone's trust back, the complexity of Kate always trying to do the right thing to protect her friends, but often being in the wrong. Seeing Zoe Newman and Stan Edgar again. The squad potentially getting to join up with the boys. Cypher training Marie to use her powers. Jordan's speech in episode 3. Jordan and Marie's first I love yous. Jordan becoming comfortable with their gender within their relationship. Marie becoming a god tier soup. Marie's entire aesthetic. She's everything. The potential of white supremacist Homelander being taken down by queer black college student Marie Moreau. Yeah, I like the sound of that. So my number four is Gen V. Not the only superhero show on this list. Well, obviously not the only one. This is like the third superhero show I've had on here, but it is also not the last. And that takes us to our top three.
Woo!
Gabby, what is your number three?
My number three is Heated Rivalry.
Oh, of course. It had to be on here somewhere.
Hell yeah. The gay hockey show. Let's fucking go, bitch. As a lover of love, as a lover of yearning, as a lover of romance in any and all forms, I read 77 books last year, y'all. And like 70 of them were romance. I'm not going to lie. Like they all had some sort of romance in them, except for like one. Yeah, so let's talk about it. Heated Rivalry, created by Jacob Tierney. Shout out to Jacob Tierney. Shout out to Letterkenny. Written by Jacob Tierney. Directed by Jacob Tierney. Starring Hudson Williams, Connor Story, Francois Arnaud, and Robbie GK.
Francois.
Amongst others. But Francois, baby, sweet, the ending of episode 5.
I also discovered him through a show that also had Maria Gabriela DeFaria on it.
Ooh, damn. Turns out she's in a lot of stuff.
She had a sitcom era after she did Deadly Class, so.
Ah, okay, okay, okay. Let me
also,
let me
that's
get
how I found our boy from, I can't think of his name right now, from She-Hulk, and he's on Abbott Elementary, and I'm gonna look him up. You talk.
Okay, heated rivalry. The premise: Shane Hollander and Ilya Rosanov are two professional ice hockey players who compete on rival teams, the Montreal Metros and the Boston Raiders, respectively. Although their on-ice rivalry is amplified by media coverage and personal perception, the two develop a private, initially casual relationship that continues intermittently over several years as they pursue their hockey careers. This show starts in 2008. Okay, it starts in 2008 before the hockey draft, and it goes until 2021, I believe.
Oh, I was about to say, this is a period piece? Well, no wonder the homophobia is so strong.
Boy, is it a period piece. There were skinny jeans. They were doing skinny jeans, wrinkled button-up shirts at the club. Like, girl, loved it. The yearning, the frustration. That's why I love that it started in 2008, because now it would seem a little bit impossible. Although there are no out hockey players in the NHL. There are former hockey players on the NHL that are out, but they didn't come out till after they were no longer part of the league. So
tends to be the case with male pro sports.
Yeah. Low key, they could still be happening, is what I'm saying. I feel like for a relatively younger audience that this is for, it makes a little bit more sense to start in 2008. It's a little bit more believable. I also like that Hudson Williams and Connor Story, who are our main actors, are also out. I don't know what their orientation is, but they are not straight. I haven't looked it up, but I love that they're not straight because the characters are not straight. I think the characters are bisexual, but don't quote me. I have not read the books, and it wasn't super delineated in the show. It was like, yeah, I'll date girls, but also, are you dating girls because you like girls or...
Compet.
Is it because you have to appear straight? I'm a little confused. This is a little bit more subtle than I understand. Anyway, there's so much more nuance to this. I really dug this. It was beautiful. It was sweet. Dude, Pedro Pascal is watching this. It's so good. I found out Pedro Pascal is watching this because somebody posted like their reaction at a gay bar watching episode 5 because they put it on the big screen. And spoilies, the end of episode 5 has Francois Arnaud character pulling Robbie GQ onto the center of the ice and kissing him, as in like coming out, but like in the most dramatic fashion you can think of.
Always with the drama. So theatrical.
Yes. But like it caused so much cheer. Like at this restaurant, everybody was cheering like it was a championship win, right? And so this person posted it, and then like under it, Pedro Pascal like commented crying emoji and stuff. And I was like, Anyway, love him. Love you. Love this. Everyone should watch Heated Rivalry. Please watch it. It's so great. And we're already going to get a season 2, but we might not get it till 2027. So I am a sad girl, but I'm excited.
Sounds about right. So Francois Arnaud, Maria Gabriela DeFaria, and Josh Segarra were all on a comedy show together, which is how I discovered Francois and Josh for the first time.
I love Josh Segarra.
I know. We all do. He's great.
He's a cutie patootie. I know him originally from Sirens.
The Netflix one?
No, it was not on Netflix. It was on network television.
Josh was on 2 Siren shows? That's crazy.
Yeah, but the other Siren show was about paramedics. So Sirens as in wee-oo, wee-oo, wee-oo.
That's so funny.
Yeah, and he played a police officer that was dating one of the guy's sisters.
Wild.
But he was in a lot of episodes and he was so cute. And I was like, is that really how he is? And I think he is. Like, I've never seen him play a straight man.
So the 3 actors that I mentioned, Francois, Maria, and Josh, they were playing a love triangle. And I think Francois and Josh were supposed to be cousins or something like that.
Okay, got it, got it. I mean, they're both tan with that 5 o'clock shadow, so it worked.
Cassie, is your number 3 once again Grey's Anatomy?
Surprise, it's not.
Yo, all right, we got it. Top 3,
go,
there we go.
Cassie.
What is your number 3?
God, you know, amazing. We got here, we did it. My number 3 is The Bear.
Nice.
One of the 3 shows that I watched this year.
Woo.
I mean, let's be real. It's The Bear, created by Christopher Storer and Joanna Callow, starring Jeremy Allen White, Evan Mosbacharach, Ayo Edebiri, Lionel Boyce, Eliza Colon-Zayas, Abby Elliott, Maddie Matheson, Edwin Lee Gibson, other people, you know. It's The Bear. Season 4 didn't, like, blow me away, but I like this show. I like this show a lot. Ayo Edebiri carries the entire thing on her back. Yes, queen, thank you.
Hold on,
goddamn.
Liza is amazing.
No, you're right. You're right. It's just like, Ayo, what can't you do? Like, you can act the shit out of this. You can write the shit out of this. Ayo, we don't deserve you.
You know what I'm just realizing? I've talked about David Zayas. We have talked about David Zayas. He's actually in Dexter earlier on my list. And he plays her husband on The Bear. And it just occurred to me that they have the same last name because they're married.
What? Oh. That's awesome.
Just hit me.
Oh, I love when that happens. That's fun.
So, yep, fun fact for the day, guys. It only took us 2 years to realize it.
It's the Bear. Season 4. It ends kind of wild, but I'm also okay with it. But I'm also like, is there going to be a season 5? Or...
I'm sure there is.
I just like...
I think there is.
With how season 4 ended, I don't know what you do with season 5.
I feel like season 4 didn't even end in a resolute way. Also, yes, it's already confirmed that they will be doing a season 5 for a 2026 release.
All right. I mean, I'm assuming then that the restaurant isn't going to get shut down, and I don't know.
We'll see. Or it is, and they got to find a way to make it not shut down anymore.
Yep.
I guess they do, because between that countdown clock and the other thing that happened at the end of the season, which I won't spoil, naming the show The Bear would be really irrelevant if they didn't keep the restaurant going.
I don't know if that's true, because technically Jeremy Allen White is The Bear.
Well, that's why I'm saying the other thing that happened at the end of the season.
As long as the show still follows him, we're fine.
Listen, I don't know. But overall, I mean, the show's great. Like, it still strikes that great balance of comedic and upsetting.
I don't know about a great balance, but it's mostly upsetting.
But it also hits... Listen, don't nominate it as a comedy. Stop doing that. That's not what it is. But when it wants to be funny, it really is.
When it's funny, it's funny.
It's really impressive just like how they navigate that and how they can switch back and forth like very quickly.
Also, the best episode of the season was the episode that Io and Lionel wrote.
Oh god, it was. It absolutely was. Just the doing the hair in the friend's house thing, like, oh, I went with my sister when she got her hair done so many times. That's like hours and hours.
I was the girl who had to go get her hair done.
Yeah.
The braids be taking ages.
Endurance.
Even for a toddler, they take a while.
God, the endurance.
Also, that episode was directed by Janiska Bravo, who directed Zola, which is a movie that I really, really like.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I might love that movie. Based on one of the greatest stories to ever come out of Twitter.
That was crazy.
I had the greatest time reading that story and then going to see that movie. All right, guys, that takes us to my number 3. Let's head into animation, shall we? My number 3 is The Mighty Nein, which is created by Critical Role, and it stars the members of Critical Role. So Laura Bailey, Taliesin Jaffe, Ashley Johnson, Matthew Mercer, Liam O'Brien, Marisha Ray, Sam Riegel, and Travis Willingham. It also features Mark Strong, Red Child, Ivana Sakno, Angelica Houston, Rahul Kohli, Ming-Na Wen, Nathan Fillion, Lucy Liu, Tania Miller, Alan Cumming, Anika Noni Rose, and Ali E. Carvalho. And the IMDb summary is, follows a group of criminals and misfits who are the only ones that can prevent the kingdom from plunging into chaos when an arcane artifact capable of reshaping reality falls into the wrong hands. This is a very long list, so let's get into this. Everything about this show is great. The party is full of such complex characters. Bo is my favorite. Bo being incredibly intelligent and capable while also being stubborn and cocky. And also, like, insecure. Ford's search for self by pretending to be something he's not and taking on certain characteristics of his former captain. His absolute confusion and ignorance about gods and magic. Jester being chaos incarnate and having a crisis of faith over the Traveler. Caleb's traumatic history and the way it ties into the broader story. The way he and Nott love each other in such a platonic way. Not the Brave being so haunted by her past that she has to drink through the pain and the heartbreak that comes from witnessing her addiction, her undying motherly love for Caleb and later the entire party, Molly Mock being the kindest, most beautiful soul while also having a literal past life that may include blood magic and worshiping him like a god. Yasha has barely been on the show but is already so interesting. I know that woman is tortured AF and I'm gonna love her for it. The deep lore that the show immediately dives into, more so than Vox Machina has done. The way the show displays politics of this fictional world. An unexpected appearance from Nidus Okiro, who's a character from the Calamity mini campaign played by Lou Wilson. The small Easter eggs to the legend of Vox Machina, because they're a famous party by this point. 4 Disney princesses having guest roles this season.
Woo!
Anika Noni Rose having a whole musical number, Ali E. Carvalho also getting to sing, Dairon, aka Ming-Na Wen's character, having the cleanest fade on the continent, Amy Carrero guest starring as Yasha's wife, Jester being braised in a brothel, because insane, German being used as the Zimnian language, Caleb having been in a poly relationship with Astrid and Edwolf, like what, bro? Ivana Sakno as Astrid, The stacked guest cast, the incredible animation, the cool fights, the show being unafraid to get dark, the opening heist scene. I could talk about how good this show is for a very long time. In my opinion, it is currently the best high fantasy show on TV, which is crazy because it's only taken the crown from its sister show, The Legend of Vox Machina. The Mighty Nein, if you have not watched it, please check it out. It's so good. Like, I thought The Legend of Vox Machina was good. Within the first episode of The Mighty Nein, I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. So please check out The Mighty Nein. And that takes us to number two. Gabby, what show is your number two show?
My number two show is Alien Earth.
Skip.
I knew it.
Cassie, what is your number two show? Because clearly it's not Grey's Anatomy.
Surprise, it's Grey's Anatomy. No. My number two show is Chief of War.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the only person who watched that show, and it makes me so sad.
Somebody in my house was watching it at some point because it's popping up on the Apple TV as previously watched. So.
Oh, good. Good for them. People should watch it.
I think it was my dad.
That makes sense. It's created by Thomas Paz Sibet and Jason Momoa. It stars Jason Momoa, Lucien Buchanan. I'm going to butcher a bunch of these names. Te Ao'o Henepihinga, Te Kohe Tuhaka, Brandon Finn, Siwa Ikaleo, Maine Kinimaka, Roy Mata Fox, Kiala Kahuanui Pelaka, Moses Goods, James Udom, Benjamin Plautus, maybe? It's Dutch, I'm not sure. And Kaina Makua. It's a historical fiction. We'll say that because they do take some liberties. But based on true events, when the four major kingdoms of the Hawaiian Islands were in a state of war, and it follows a warrior chief who is not actually in charge of one of the islands, but is heavily involved in things, and is played by Jason Momoa. Ah, this show is great. Like, the word representation gets used a lot. And while I think representation is a good word for what it is, it often doesn't go quite far enough. Because you can have representation through, like, hey, we're showing this culture, this group of people. Something like this that is made by Hawaiians in Hawaii about Hawaiian history. I don't know. We just need more shit like this. Because it's just so cool to see how much is like their own history that they're almost reenacting with, again, liberties taken. And just most of the show, well, I would say maybe half of the show is in Hawaiian. They speak a lot of English. Not really sure why. Like, they don't need to. I don't know. The show's just, it's so cool and it's so beautiful. The costume design is fucking phenomenal. The use of color and just, oh my God. And the performances are so good. It's just like, it's just such a fun experience to immerse yourself in a culture that I'm not terribly familiar with. Like, I have a friend who's from Hawaii, but other than that, I don't know a ton about Hawaiian history or culture. And so seeing it presented by the people whose culture it is so great. They had cultural advisors everywhere. They apparently built ships from scratch to make sure that they were built correctly. There's just so much love and care put into this, and I think it shows. And it's so good. And it was supposed to be a miniseries, but apparently there might be more. So, like,
oh, yeah.
Please watch it, because if they make more, I will happily watch it, because it's so good.
I'm sure that there's plenty of Hawaiian history to dig into, too, especially since we don't see those stories a lot.
Yeah.
I might have to put it on my watch list, because I am interested in Hawaiian culture.
They haven't even done a ton of, like, white people invading. Which you know is going to happen. There's been some white people, yeah. But the whole, like, we're going to take over the islands and destroy your culture and everything, that really hasn't happened yet, so.
Yeah, there's a reason why the Hawaiian language isn't a prominently spoken language on that island anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. These white men are dangerous, man.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of vibes.
Especially to the indigenous.
Oh, also, shout out to Kaina Makua, who apparently had no prior acting experience.
He didn't. They find him in, like, a parking lot.
Jason Momoa said he saw him, like, on a beach and was like, holy shit, that guy is perfect to play Kamehameha.
That's what it was.
He did, and he never acted before, and he fucking kills it.
Seeing a guy on the beach and just going, that's him, is crazy.
It worked. It really worked.
It worked?
I assume so. All right, guys. So my number two is Andor, and Ooh. It was created by Tony Gilroy. It's based on a film series created by George Lucas, and it stars Diego Luna, Genevieve O'Reilly, Stellan Skarsgård, Denise Gao, Kyle Soller, Elizabeth Dalau, Faye Marseille, Mohamed Ben Amour, and Adria Arjona. And the IMDb summary is, in an era filled with danger, deception, and intrigue, Cassian Andor embarks on a path that is destined to turn him into a rebel hero.
We know that you were just reading things, but based on a film series by George Lucas is the most understated way to talk about, like, the most popular series of all time.
Yeah, that's actually my writing, but, like...
Incredible.
What else am I going to say? Like, yeah, it's created on a series based on this guy.
Star Wars.
Right?
Yeah.
It is based on Star Wars. Okay, this one is a really, 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 really long one, and I'm so sorry, but, like, I have a lot of thoughts, and I didn't realize how many thoughts I had until I wrote it down. So let's go. Watching the first two episodes before the rest of the world and a room full of Star Wars fans in Japan after a panel with the cast was an incredible experience. And I got into that panel on a whim. Mind you, I was not in the room with the actual cast. I was in a room that was streaming what was going on in the other room at the same time. But still, phenomenal. Amazing. Loved it. An amazing series about revolution. Diego Luna's performance as Cassian Andor. Adria Arjona's portrayal of Bix's PTSD and depression and her desire to find something to feel. I wish there was more Bix in the season. Mon Mothma having the most fire crash out in the third episode. Cyril slowly realizing he's been fighting for the wrong side, only to be too distracted by Andor to fully grasp his redemption. Cyril finally confronting Andor and Andor responding, "Who are you?" Andor being the sole obsession of Cyril's life and the catalyst of his entire story and end, only for Cyril to mean nothing to Andor. Deidre realizing that fascism is a wheel that will eventually crush you too, even if you helped build the system. The way Andor comforts an ordinary Imperial woman who has joined the rebellion and is risking her life to help him.
"You'll never feel right unless you're doing what you can to stop them. You're coming home to yourself. You've become more than your fear. Let that protect you."
The profoundness of Andor receiving the iconic motto, "Rebellions are built on hope," from an ordinary hotel employee and passing it on to Jyn Erso in Rogue One. The existence of Force Healers. The Force Healer prophesying Andor's fate. The way Nimic's manifesto haunts the narrative and further emphasizes the significance of ordinary people working together in revolution. In Nimic's words,
"Remember this. Freedom is a pure idea. It occurs spontaneously and without instruction. The Imperial need for control is so desperate because it is so unnatural. Tyranny requires constant effort. It breaks. It leaks. Authority is brittle. Oppression is the mask of fear."
The birth of K2SO, Cyril and Deirdre's weird romantic relationship, getting to see Syndrilla and their culture, Genevieve O'Reilly's powerful performance as Mon Mothma, the first arc having an entire commentary on undocumented immigrants and the dangers they face, Kleya's history with Luthen and her unexpectedly becoming a foil and parallel for Andor, Kleya flirting with Vel that one time, Vel and Senta reuniting and finally coming to terms only for tragedy to strike, I would have crashed out. The entire third arc of the show, basically going full Les Mis French Revolution in episode 8. Do you hear the people sing? Episode 8 is devastating, haunting, the absolute horror of watching the Empire commit genocide, the helplessness of the Gorman people as they cried out for help, the propaganda that led to their accepted destruction. Episode 9 dealing with the political aftermath, the Gorman senator whose people were murdered shouting,
"No warrant! No charges! This is the Senate chamber! I have every right to be here! But no one help me! Gorman is being slaughtered! It's my people today and yours tomorrow. Remember this day. Remember Gorman. This would be you soon enough."
Oof. Displaying how good at political theater Bail Organa is, Mon Mothma's extraordinary and topical speech in the Senate. I've quoted this part of the speech before, but I want it repeated.
"I believe we are in crisis. The distance between what is said and what is known to be true has become an abyss. Of all the things at risk, the loss of an objective reality is perhaps the most dangerous.
The death of truth is the ultimate victory of evil. When truth leaves us, when we let it slip away, when it is ripped from our hands, we become vulnerable to the appetite of whatever monster screams the loudest."
Also, this episode won the Emmy for Outstanding Writing for a Drama Series.
Yep.
The way the final episode leads directly into Rogue One, that it ends in what we as the audience know is technically Andor's death march. And while I've come to the point where I believe Bix could have been handled much better and in a more interesting manner for the last half of the show, I love that the show's final shot ends in what Star Wars is all about, hope and family. And we discover that Andor has a child. And while he has never and will never meet this child, his legacy lives on in the rebellion and in his child. And those are my thoughts on Andor. And that takes us to our number ones. But before we do that, I have Dallas's list. So let's go through that. All right, guys. So Dallas's number 10 is WWE Raw.
There we
go. I
knew
it.
Number 9, It, Welcome to Derry. Number 8, Severance. Number 7, Invincible. Number 6, Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Number 5, WWE Unreal. Number 4, Peacemaker. Number 3, The Bear. Number 2, Daredevil Born Again. And number 1, The Studio.
Okay.
And that takes us to our number ones. Gabby, what is your number one show of 2025?
My number one show of 2025 is Severance.
Ah, there we go.
I had to make this my number one because I have not shouted at a television like this.
All right, Tyra Banks.
I look forward to shouting at my TV soon.
Probably since Game of Thrones. I will not be spoiling because Demi is currently watching this. But as always, Mark S. can catch these hands. Everybody can catch these hands.
Mark can catch these hands?
Everybody can catch these hands. Demi, everyone.
Oh, no.
Not just Mark. Helly, everybody. I hate all of you. But I also love all of you. And I get it. But I also don't get it. How could you? Oh, I love the show. And you can't explain this to anybody is the thing. Like, when you show people pictures of the show, it's at an office building. It's just people at an office. And you're like, sure, but you can.
In isolation. It's the same thing with Succession. You can't do screenshots.
No, you can't do screenshots.
When Succession was coming out and people were like, oh my God, the scene when this happened and it's a boardroom.
Yeah, exactly.
And Severance is the same thing. It's like, oh, did you see the scene? They're all sitting in cubicles.
Or they're in an elevator.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. Succession is like that as somebody who has watched the whole show. Like, that is legit what it is.
Again, I had to make it my number one because I haven't shouted at a TV. My man had to restrain me.
I cannot wait.
He had to hold me. He had to be like, it's going to be okay. And I'm like, it's not okay. But when you show people, it's like cubicles. You're like, this is the most compelling show I have seen in so long.
Like, oh shit, that nigga's outside. That's crazy. Like,
yeah, but it's amazing. The theories that are coming out of this show, I just need everybody to watch it and then tell me what they think.
I've watched the first three episodes of season two already. I'm trying to finish the season by like the end of this week.
Okay.
I finished season one like the other day. Okay. Yes, this show has been super good so far, and I am really, really excited to see like where the rest of the show goes.
Okay.
It is fascinating.
Oh, so you know who Miss Casey is?
Oh, yeah. Me and Dallas were talking about that yesterday. I actually figured that out the episode before they make the reveal.
What? How?
Because they show a picture of her.
Oh. Yep, they did. They did do that.
But it's like, I also am like, oh, I understand why people didn't catch that because the picture is so ripped up and like crumpled and like taped over by the time that you do see it. But I looked at it and was like, that woman looks Asian.
Oh,
kind of looks like Deejin, actually.
Okay. Thank you for adding the second part because I was getting a little worried there.
There is only one Asian person on this show.
Yikes.
That's true.
I tried to watch Severance twice. I make it a few episodes in and I get bored every time.
Yeah, it'd be doing that.
I think it really doesn't hit until you, because I also like stopped watching for several months. And then
don't
when I got
to
episode 7, 8, 9, I was like, oh, snap.
And that's
exactly what
it is. I will not. If it's one of those, you got to make it a certain number of fuck off. I'm going to watch Grey's Anatomy again.
Girl.
It's very good. I'm super excited to see where it goes from here. I have some thoughts already on the season that I'm watching. There are certain people that I'm like, I don't really trust you right now. What's going on right now? I don't understand why you're behaving so weird.
Also, why
is there a child in the office?
Yeah. Oh, you'll learn. You'll learn.
Thank God. Because I'm like, why is there a child? What are we breaking child labor laws now? We don't care anymore.
Listen, some people don't buy child care.
Girl, they're breaking so many other laws.
They're not, though. They're in the Wild West. They don't have laws for what they're doing right now.
That's
so, like, they're
like
not
the
breaking any
privacy.
Laws. There are definitely child labor laws, and I'm curious and concerned as to why there's a child in the office. But anyway.
You will learn why they glad explain it. But also, I love that child's rivalry with Mr. Milkshake. It's not Mr. Milkshake, but Mr.
Milchick.
Mr. Milchick. I love
her
rivalry.
She has a rivalry with him? Or are they?
Oh, you will see.
That's why. Also, funny. Gwendolyn Christie just popped up for some reason with a bunch of goats.
She's in this season. She's needed. You got to just watch it. Please, please.
The fact that there is an office building room with hills of green and goats is wild.
Honestly, more offices would probably benefit from having something like that.
Having goats in the office?
Not even just goats, but like actual nature, so that you're not just stuck in a sterile building and you can't see outside, or you can see outside and you can see the nature, but you can't get to it because capitalism hates you and wants you to die.
That's the premise of the show.
Yep.
Well, that's just the premise of life.
Cassie, what is your number one show? I know what it is, but please tell the audience.
I mean, so does Gabby if she's been following along.
I have been.
My number one show is Alien Earth.
Let's talk about it. Woo!
So, Alien Earth is created by Noah Hawley, based on the Alien movies, as you are, I'm sure, aware. It stars Sidney Chandler, Alex Lothar, Essie Davis, Samuel Blanken, Babu Cisse, Adarsh Gurav, Irana James, Lily Newmark, Jonathan Ajayi, David Reyesdahl, T.M. Camille, I'm probably pronouncing that incorrectly, Mo Varel, Adrian Edmondson, Timothy Oliphant, other people, it's a lot of people, there's a lot of people on this show.
There's so many people on that show.
Basically, the premise is there are some kids who I think are dying, and they get their consciousness uploaded into adult cyborg bodies as an experiment by basically Elon Musk, who is not called Elon Musk, but he's Elon Musk.
But he's Elon Musk.
I love all the Elon Musk proxies that we get in modern media. It's great.
Also, I love how hateful they are.
It's been this year's been so good for Elon Musk proxies, and I just want to say thank you, because my God. Mm-hmm.
They all suck.
They're so bad.
Like he does.
Alien Earth is my shit intensely.
Somebody just recommended that I watch it today.
It's good. You should.
So, yes, I think you would enjoy it. However, it does dip into horror plenty, because of course it does. You know it does.
It does, it's Alien.
But if you're willing to get through that, I think it is fantastic.
It's also not as... So there's one scene where I was like, no. But other than that, it's not that bad. And that usually very when...
Wait, what do you mean by not that bad? Do you mean scare-wise?
Scare-wise.
Okay, because I will say, it is the grossest thing I have seen in a long time. And I love that, for me. Because I'm a freak.
Oh, but we're going to talk about it, because I don't know what you're talking about gross-wise.
What the fuck do you mean you don't know what I'm talking about gross-wise? The first episode has an eyeball popping out of a cat.
Actually,
and then...
you know what? I hated the eyeball. The eyeball made me want to bury my skin.
It's so good.
I hate that eyeball. And I hated the way that the eyeball story...
It's so cute.
I hated the end of the eyeball story. I hated that. I hated that for us. Excited. I hated that for the kids. I hated that for everyone.
Season two, baby.
The only episode I didn't like, but I understand the necessity of this episode because it is an alien property, and sometimes you just want the alien bit
of it all. I
think I'm
going to agree with you.
I don't think we needed that episode. It was my least favorite episode, but I understand. Huh?
The flashback one, so to speak?
Yes.
I
hated
that episode. I understand.
I was like, we know what happened to the crew. We know what happened.
It's an alien movie where you already know what happens.
It felt like torture porn. It felt like torture porn.
You know what? It kind of did.
For me.
It kind of did because we knew how it was going to end up. It's like, this is an exercise in watching all these people die, and we know how this is going to go, so why are we... But I can see why they did it, though.
I can see, because they're like, listen, we're not doing the alien thing, and this is, after all... an alien property. So I get it, but I fucking hated the shit out of it. I hated all of it.
They did not skimp on xenomorphs in this show.
No, they
didn't. I will say that.
Yeah, we got so much. And we got so much information. And for once, I was like rooting for them, which is crazy.
Well, no, 100%.
Like, kill 100%. That fucking alien. I'm like, get it out of here. I am tired of this alien winning. I normally hate xenomorphs, and in this case, I was like, hell yeah, xenomorph, hell yeah.
Listen, xenomorphs are great. All the aliens in this show are great.
Wendy and the xenomorphs, I was rooting for all
that.
That anyway.
Whole team up is insane.
Dude, the last episode, when they were like, we'll become ghosts. Yes.
It's so good.
You haunt this place. Okay, anyway, 10 out of 10. It was amazing. And I was forced to watch it. My boyfriend would be like, we're watching Alien right now. And I'm like, but you already finished it. And he's like, this is for you. And I'd be like, this feels threatening, but also it is a good show. So I will be watching it. And it's my number two.
It's so good. And it's the alien life forms, even that aren't the xenomorph, are so good. I mean, I know you
those
don't
I
like
hate.
The eyeball, but...
I fucking hate the eyeball. I hate the eyeball. I hate the flower. I hate those. I hate what the flies did to Darwin.
Oh my God. Yeah. The flower I thought was underwhelming, but the flies, that was worth waiting to see what they did. It was nasty.
It was not for me. I hated it. I was like, no.
It was for me. And that's okay.
Ugh.
All of it was for me.
I really liked that actor. He was in,
I mean, he's lovely.
He was in Shadow and Bone.
I know. He was Jesper, and it makes me so sad. But
yeah.
Listen. I wanted it to get gross, and it got gross, and I was so pleased. Listen, not even just the fucking aliens. Ripping a man's jaw off at the end of, like, the next to last episode, that scene lives in my mind forever because
it was so
good.
You want to see how powerful... But, okay, so my partner said something that I thought was interesting. He was like, I don't understand the inconsistency in power with these children robots, because he's like, that girl just ripped that guy's jaw off, but now they need two people to carry a body. And I'm like, baby, they're children. They probably aren't thinking I'm strong enough to throw this man over my shoulder. Also, like, the filmmakers probably forgot for a second.
Well, I feel like it's more like they don't know their own limitations. They don't know what they're capable of until they need to. When Noobs needed to rip a man's jaw off, she did it like it was nothing. But, like, carrying a body takes a little more effort. And when you have the fucking two Stooges doing it, I think it was them.
Yeah. Like, yep, it was the two Stooges.
That's hard. You try carrying the body, Gabby's partner. So you like it.
Exactly. Anyway, it's fine. Well, he's like, of course I'm going to need to. I'm not a cool robot thing. Anyway,
excuses.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
I love
Alien Earth Rocks. To me, you should watch it. Just understand that
and
it is
scary and
gross.
We're getting a second season.
We are getting a second season. And I'm so excited, especially with how season one ended.
Same. I was like, ooh, this is ripe for a second season.
All right, guys. This last one's going to take a second. So, of course, the year that I visited Japan is coincidentally the same year that my favorite show is a Japanese anime. In fact, it is my favorite anime. It is My Hero Academia, which I believe was number 8 on my list last year. It's created by Kohei Horikoshi, and it's based on his manga. It stars Daki Yamashita, Nobuhiko Okamoto, Ayane Sakura, Yuki Kaji, Kenta Miyake, Koki Uchiyama, and Akio Asuka, and a bunch of other people. Because there are so many characters on My Hero Academia. The IMDb summary is a superhero admiring boy enrolls in a prestigious hero academy and learns what it really means to be a hero after the strongest superhero grants him his own powers.
Ooh.
For those who have never seen My Hero Academia, powers in this universe are called quirks, so I will be using that word and not powers. All right, this is a very long list. So at first I was like, wow, is this actually my number one versus Andor? Because I wrote a lot about Andor, and then I started writing about this show, and I was like, nope, it earned number one. This is my number one for having one of my all-time favorite final seasons and episodes in all of television. It has a perfect ending. Also, I cried through 2/3 of the episodes in this season.
Damn.
Also, there were 12 episodes. So the fact that I cried through like 2/3 of the show, that's an insane number of episodes to cry at.
Damn.
And I've never done that for any show. Incredible animation, epic battles in almost every episode. Emotional, heartfelt moments throughout, the hopelessness of war, and the highest highs of victory. The season's intro and outro sequences, so good. Deku's final battle with Shigaraki. Bakugo coming back from the dead and immediately helping Deku save All Might. The entire 1A class coming to back up Deku and heading into the intro sequence on the words,
"We are here!"
Watching a battalion of heroes clear a path and protect Deku to ensure he gets the final blow. Bakugo crying at the mere thought of Deku never getting his powers back. Todoroki trying to bond with his long-lost oldest brother, who tried to kill him for several seasons, and finding out that his favorite food is also soba, implying that they'll be able to reconcile before Dobby dies. Discovering that Shigaraki's life has been orchestrated this entire time. Deku's mom watching him become the world's greatest hero after implying he'd never be able to as a child.
Oh, that's mean.
Yeah, that was some bullshit. I just want to say, don't do that to your kid when you know
she didn't mean
more
to.
Than anything of being a superhero, don't be like, you'll never be that. She didn't say it with that, like, but still, like,
no
on.
Yeah, she says I'm sorry. She doesn't say you'll never be a superhero. She says I'm sorry. Anyway, All Might using a mech suit that incorporates all his students' quirks, crying with fear that All Might might die. Deku being willing to sacrifice his quirks. Deku wanting to save Shigaraki until the bitter end. Shigaraki's internal monologue saying,
"Back then, if someone had taken my hand, maybe."
Deku's inner child doing what no one ever did and offering Shigaraki's inner child his hand and saying,
"I was lost. Somebody took me by the hand. It gave me pain." "And that's why I'm here. It's the reason I looked for you. Do you see? Everything will be okay."
And holding on even as his arms break off. Shigaraki telling Deku,
"I guess in the end, you were right about me. I really am just a crying child."
Deku and Bakugo both being legacies of All Might after all their years competing and challenging each other to be better. Bakugo as a hero telling the big bad,
"I'm the final boss! Got it?"
Okay.
Showing how much heroes inspire ordinary citizens and how those same ordinary citizens can inspire the heroes too. Showing the stakes through those citizens and watching what actions they take to help. The way we, the audience, feel the same as the citizens watching. Deku changing the weather off his sheer strength, just like All Might in Season 1. All For One's realization that what makes Deku powerful.
"I see now. That's it. Izuku Midoriya. The keys. Your weakness. It's something All Might didn't have. The strength of weakness. Yes. It makes these ants rise again and again. They won't bow out as long as you're still trying."
The show allowing two truths to be true about Deku.
"I can never forgive the pain you caused. That's why we had to fight. I wanted to stop you. And for you to stop yourself. To break the chain of sorrow."
The epilogue episodes. The Todoroki family finally getting their shit together, even if it means they're divided. Ochako struggling with Toga's death. Her questioning if things would have been different if she'd met Toga as a child. My kids graduating. Todoroki and Bakugo becoming top-ranking heroes. My boy Mirio becoming the number one hero, as he should.
That should have been.
The photos that tell us where all of 1A has ended up as adults. Deku encouraging a boy with a lesser quirk that he can be a hero, reflecting when he was a boy who just wanted to be a hero. Seeing how the world has changed because of the final battle and how people are more willing to hold out their hand. Class 1A always supporting each other. Deku getting a mech suit from All Might and his former classmates 8 years after losing his quirk so he can continue being a hero like he always wanted. The show has been Deku living out his dream, a quirkless boy who ends up with the most powerful quirk of all, only to sacrifice it in the greatest battle the world had ever seen. Episode 2 of the whole show ends with Deku saying,
"Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention that this is the story of how I became the world's greatest hero."
But in the end, the show wasn't about one boy becoming the greatest hero of all time. It was about how he and his friends became the greatest heroes of all time together. Best superhero media ever. And as the show says,
go beyond plus ultra.
And that is my favorite show of the year, My Hero Academia. It's so freaking good. If you have not seen My Hero Academia, please watch it. Ugh, it's so good. The best superheroes, all the best superheroes. And that's it.
Yay!
That's all we've got for you guys today. We did it. That is our top 10 favorite shows of the year, or you know, Cassie's top 3.
That's still top 10. I went.
Oh, I'm sorry. Grey's Anatomy is 7 of those top 10.
Yes.
It's a different season for each of the 7. thank you guys for joining us. Cassie, thank you for joining us, even though you didn't know whether or not your maintenance person was going to be showing up. And even though you only have 3 things on the list, I personally just think that's amusing as hell. Far more amusing that we had 7 Grey's Anatomies.
I'm glad that I got to decide what it was, because y'all did me dirty. Or do me dirty, I suppose, in the actors episode.
You guys will have to wait to hear tomorrow's episode to find out how we did Cassie dirty. Gabby, thank you for joining us and telling us all about your comfort shows.
See?
So many comfort sitcoms.
Yes.
And I love that for you.
I'm a sitcom girly.
Thank you to Brandon and Io over at Crown Digital for putting us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thank you, audience, for listening to this entire thing. If you've made it this far, you've listened to the entire thing. So you guys can find us on Facebook at Creative Differences PC. You can find us on TikTok at Creative Differences Pod, and you can find us on Instagram and Tumblr at Creative Differences Podcast. Gabby, Cassie, where can they find you guys?
Hi, you can find me on Instagram at Stegosaurio.
You can find me on Blue Sky at Sassy Soothsayer. Talk to me about, you know, talk to me about Alien Earth and how gross it was, because it was just, it was doing something for me.
You guys can find me on Letterboxd at Demi Joie. Joie is spelled J-O-I-E. You guys can find Dallas at Wrestling and Pudding.
Hey.
Thanks again for joining us. Tune in again tomorrow. We will be talking about our top 10 favorite actors of 2025. Thank you so much. It's been different.
Bye.
Hey, so Cassie.
What up, dog?
You want to talk to us about how the xenomorph is so sexually coded?
Girl, what?
I mean, okay. It's is it? Because I like, you can basically make it sexual. I mean, come on. Stab me with that tail anytime, you know what I'm saying? But I don't know that it's intended to be super sexual.
I don't know. I think it is. I don't think you make that design and don't intend for it to be phallic.
Girl, what?
You definitely can. You definitely can. And you know what? I'm into it. So, mission accomplished.